and welcome to Writing About Dragons and Shit, a podcast where two authors and a writer get together and talk about the ways they tell stories. I am one of your hosts, Trevor Bettis, writer of Isle Champions of the Forgotten Realms and host of Too Many Podcasts, and with me each week are two amazing people who are...
I'm Erin M. Evans. I write fantasy novels. I'm best known for the Brimstone Angels saga and the books of the Usurper.
It is I, B. Dave Walters, friends to the statistical majority of mankind, and I just ruined my pay-per-click ad targeting by ordering a copy of Morning Glory Milking Farm.
That's a great segue into something we should talk about. Hey, segue. Listeners, we're going to be doing apparently a smutty book club.
Apparently. That's the thing that happened.
And we talked just before hitting the record button about what our loose plans on it. I am going to pass it over to Erin because she just took notes on it. But yes. The main point of this episode right now is, if you're going to be part of this, go get the book now. Like, you can order the physical one or you can get it on Kindle. But this is the go ahead. Go get it. But for what we're going to do after that, Erin.
So our plan is to start the week of the 15th.
Dun, dun.
So get your books. We will have discussions up on our Discord for people to talk about their experiences, their predictions for the book, stuff that they liked, stuff they had questions about.
Oh, there's gonna be a lot of questions.
That awaken in them. All that. Keep it relatively clean though.
Yeah.
We will be doing bonus podcasts where we discuss several chapters at a time. I will break it up. We'll figure out what's what. And yep. We'll have the dates, the approximate dates for those bonus podcasts listed on the discussions. And then we'll have one big discussion at the end about the whole experience. And hopefully in here we can get some guests to talk about this cultural experience.
That is
should be something
for it.
Book talk, it's something.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so you're not going to be missing out on normal episodes. We're still going to be doing those. The book discussion ones will be little bonus ones. We're not shooting for an hour. It's going to be a shorter form episode. But I believe I should be able to swing it that those go up the same day as the normal episodes. But if that changes, we'll let you know.
Excellent.
All right.
Any
other things that we missed there?
It is filling me with a lot of complicated emotions. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
This is gonna be fun. Let's hop into some questions. I will note that the first one is actually from Twitter that apparently has been sitting in my DM requests for a while, and I hadn't noticed, and so I felt really bad, and so I put their question here first.
Check your requests, folks. I've had many a thing. Sit for way too long. Yeah.
All right. Hello from a fellow Tangerino. I have been binge listening to y'all's podcast. Hello's from Alabama. For the last few months, and in ADHD fashion, I have listened to the episodes in 1.5 speed. I cannot get enough of y'all. I listen to the episodes while I crochet late at night as I work full time and have a toddler ransacking my house during the day. Oh, I feel you. I started my first D&D campaign earlier this year, and I'm in love. I had a question about getting my ideas unstuck from my brain. I have a current work in progress that has to do with lanterns and light, and souls are within the light. I have bits and pieces of the story, and I can see it in my mind's eye, but I'm having a little trouble linking the events. I can watch the whole movie of my story and start writing, but it feels rushed, and I stumble over stuff. As y'all have said, my brain fills it in, and then I go back to read what I have written. I'm an old-fashioned pen to paper. I'm like, I was having a stroke. Thanks to the fans, Beastly Beauty.
I got good news for you, Beastly. In TTRPGs, more than anything, you don't have to have it all.
I do think these are two separate things. I think they were saying that they got into TTRPGs, but this is their like novel work in progress.
Oh, I thought they were talking about a Teteberg. Outline. Got it. Okay. Well, then I'll let Erin go first.
Aw, thanks.
Ladies first.
So I think that this is, to be perfectly honest, this is how first drafts work. Some people write a first draft and they write too much, and going back and reading it is the experience of seeing where you have kind of filled out this story more than you should have. You've added things that don't belong. But for a lot of people, it's going back and going, ah, yes, I skipped over a lot of things here. I forgot to describe this room. I forgot to explain where this feeling came from in this character. I forgot to connect these two events, and suddenly this person is just in the room. It's very normal. So that's what it sounds like. You know, you've written a first draft. Then what you're going to do is kind of go back and find what's missing and fill it back in. Going and kind of writing it down quick like that, you know, following the images in your mind is a kind of, I think it's a good way to do a first draft, right? You're getting into the flow of it. You're sort of following the story as it's sort of pouring through you. And then you're going to go back and you're going to kind of analyze it. You're going to look at it and go, what was I trying to do? And did I do it?
Yeah.
So that's when you fix it up, when you add some more stuff. So you're doing fine.
Yeah, I do think that there's a mindset sometimes where, like, the first draft is like, well, this is mainly what it's going to be. It may not be for you. Like, your process may be that you just need to word vomit that out and then go back and fix all and add all the extra stuff to it later. And when it comes to, like, they say in the email, there's like, they see the movie in their head when they start going, they feel rushed and they start to stumble and stuff like that. Like, I do get what you're saying. And I hate to say, like, try to slow down a little bit with your head going through stuff, but I know that can be difficult. But I would say, try and keep in mind that, like, what you're seeing in your head, the cool things that you're seeing in your head, that you're like, this is what's the things that I'm seeing in my head that are setting the mood of this area or what this person's doing or anything like that. Like, get those down. And if you miss the other stuff, that's okay. That's what you can come back and add. If it's, you know, the fact that it's raining and it's the water's reflecting off the leaves or something like that, that's setting it. Cool. Maybe the bush is important, like the type of bush is important or something like that, and you didn't describe it properly or something. You can go and add that stuff later. Just get your vibe down, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, get it out of your head. Get it down on the page. That's what actually matters. And it may be that you don't necessarily have to draw, you know, as clear a line between things as you think. Like, if they're talking and they're at dinner, and then the next page is the next morning at work, I mean, the audience kind of comprehends. It's like, okay, time has passed.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. I do think the solution to this, though, that will help you is the gospel that I perpetually preach, which is nail down your beats. You know, just ask yourself what has to happen before and after. If you know, again, that there is... you know, the princess gets kidnapped. They fight the dragon. The dragon proposes to the princess, and they become, you know, the world's greatest co-parents. You know, again, you just sandwich those things. Like, what's right before and right after? You know, if the princess gets kidnapped, well, we need to see the world before. What was her life like? Where was she when she got taken? Well, if she gets grabbed, what happens immediately afterwards? Do we see where she went? How does the kingdom respond? You know what I mean? Like, some of these things naturally sort of fill themselves in. It's like that old metaphor you hear of, like, oh, the college professor puts the big rocks in the jar. Well, the jar's full. Okay, well, now it starts to put little rocks in and they fill in. And it's like, okay, now it's full. Then they pour sand in and you're like, okay, it's full. And then you pour water in and you're like, okay, it's full. Like, you fill those things in. Yeah, it's all good. Don't stress about it, though, because trying to stress about being a perfectionist about it will cause paralysis by analysis, and you will end up doing nothing.
I do really kind of love, though, the idea of a conversation saying, well, why did the princess get kidnapped by the dragon? Well, how's the dragon going to propose to her?
Think about it. Yeah, like, keep up, right?
Keep up. Yeah.
Do I have to do everything? Yeah. I mean, Donkey's not the only one that likes that sweet, sweet dragon love.
Next book.
So the next question I want to add is, this is actually from a long email that they gave three questions. This is the first question because they said they only wanted one question read at a time. Otherwise, they would die of spotlight syndrome.
That's fair. So thanks for telling us that.
Incomprehensible, but okay.
B-Dave's like, I'm immune. I have the vaccine.
I am the vaccine.
I was going to say, I feel like the vaccine comes from B-Dave.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, like, how like with newborn babies, you're supposed to hold them because you like transfer something to them, you know? Yeah, that's what it's like for me.
Just by listening to this, the vibrations of B-Dave's voice will get into your brain.
So if
I'm just saying, I'm not going to bust the two of you out, but if you go back to when we first started doing all this tomfoolery way back when, there was things you never would have done that you do all the time now today.
Fact. This is true.
But I will say, if you're ever at a con and you just see B-Dave kind of, you know, holding me against his chest, that's why.
That's it. That's what it is. That's what it is. I'm confidence shedding. Yeah.
I hope we all get to be at a con together sometime.
Yeah.
That is true. We got a bucket list.
All right. Yep. All right. Buckle up, Tan Jedi and Darth Skywalkers.
Holy shit, what I need that tattooed across my chest like a Thug Life from Tupac. Wait, say that again so I can write it down. Tan Jedi and Darth Walters. What is that?
Darth Skywalkers.
Yeah, Darth Skywalkers.
Holy shit.
This is a long one because it feels impossibly complicated. It feels like the timelines for one, the external plot with the antagonist, two, the protagonist's internal arc, and three, the protagonist's external skill growth are completely out of sync once you attach it to act structure to line up key plot points. It doesn't matter which of the dozens of act structure guidelines I use, trying to manage all of these for my outline just melted my brain until I was lying on the floor just hoping my cat would flick the plot point sticky note to the perfect place of the tight line. He didn't. He just tried to eat them.
I hadn't fully read this email. That's incredible.
At first, organizing an outline by following a 3, 5, 7, 8, or even 9-act plot structure is smooth sailing for pacing those three storylines to ramp together. But I've yet to find any structure maps that give any time for reflection or learning after the midpoint. So everything falls apart. Examples of books or movies plotted onto different structure types tend to use big events for the bullets up to the midpoint, and then afterwards the bullets are all micro scenes, so now the midpoint and the finale are so close together that it's more like a 4/5 point. When there's no breathing room between the midpoint and the finale, everything falls out of sync, with no plot points to either learn missing skills or improve existing abilities. Then the hero has to be fully powered by the midpoint. With no time for reflection, their internal arc has to be finished by the midpoint too. If they've reached their full potential in time for the midpoint, then why the heck are they getting squashed by the antagonist for the next four plot beats? And with no points for growth in between getting their trash kicked, then how does the hero suddenly win at the end without it being because of a convenient coincidence? I think this is made worse by the fact that my protagonist is brand new to the hidden world and learning magic from scratch. Oh. Since her internal arc is directly tied to her ability to use magic effectively, then if she can't learn new things after the midpoint, she would basically have to do a speed run from civilian to mage and an even speedier run on her internal arc. If she has to be full power before the midpoint, then I give up and renounce Joseph Campbell and all the saved cats. Please save me, Cameron. Oh, Cameron, I want to give you a hug right now. You
sound
very stressed.
Yeah, I do too. Also, it's so eerie because I swear this was written by like 15 years ago me. Like the exact things and everything.
You know, I would say all my training has led to this, but I actually would like you to lead off with that, Trevor. Elaborate on that because you seem to have thoughts.
So yeah,
my body is absolutely ready for this, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Like, okay, so power level and everything like that, and the distance of the story, because this is one of the things is that if you look at like, let's take Dresden Files for instance. Dresden Files, those books are urban fantasy. They take place over the span of like 2 days maybe. They're very quick timeline wise, and that's why the book starts with Dresden already a wizard and, you know, badass. I do have quotations there.
Hey, fuego, all right, you put some respect on Dresden's name.
Sorry. Every time I think about the Dresden Files, at some point I inevitably think of James Marsden's Spike from Buffy reading a book in my ear and saying, "And then I made a phone call," and that's the whole sentence. And that one sentence is the hinge point of the entire third act, and it breaks me.
I need you to know that Harry Dresden is not sorry.
Here's the thing. I do actually like the books for all of the good and bad of them. They're fun. But so when it comes to like a new character entering the Hidden World, as you said, it's so that again, that's why it feels like it's talking to 15 years ago me. I was using the same words. That is sort of the thing with it, is that you have to figure out what you feel is the feasible amount of power that they can get and still feel at the end of the book like it was a satisfying course of action. Ways that you can do this is, you know, that power has consequences. Bad things can happen to them if they are using too much of it or something like that. There has to be some kind of give and take with it. But you brought up in the email at one point, though, like Star Wars, Luke Skywalker and stuff like that, like the training in A New Hope, like Joseph Campbell's hero's journey thing is Luke Skywalker in that. And by the end of that first movie, he used the Force, I think, like what, once, we want to say maybe twice. Like he hasn't really used the Force. Like he used it, he heard Obi-Wan saying use the Force, and he shot the torpedo thing in there and blew up Death Star and all that stuff. But like, he's not swinging a lightsaber. He's not Force pushing people. So that was the amount that, you know, was satisfactory for Luke to be able to do, from starting as a farm boy to blowing up the Death Star, which is still a really big thing. So when it comes to your character entering this world and them gaining power, just remember that it is what you feel is going to be satisfying without people feeling like, oh, well, they just, you know, suddenly learned Kamehameha at the end of the last part and blew up the bad guy.
Is that how you say that?
Kamehameha, yeah.
Yeah.
Not Kamehameha.
No, the Hawaiian king is Kamehameha. Yeah. The Hawaiian king is Kamehameha. You're not wrong. No, it is Kamehameha.
Yeah.
And okay. I learned also, so much about this show through you guys.
Also, there's like 30 years of Dragon Ball Z history, and there's a chance I just don't know. But I consider myself an intermediate fan. And there's never been any explanation at all as to why they shout the name of a Hawaiian king before they throw their like ultra attack. Because it's very specific.
Yeah.
You know? I just assume, since, you know, the Japanese have such heavy ties with Hawaiian, that like the creator, it meant something to him. You know what I mean? But it literally is just like if you were like Julius Caesar, boom.
Yeah, no.
ever explained it. So
Julius Caesar.
Yeah. And like no one questioned it. You were just like, of course.
Julius.
Yeah, right. My favorite thing about that is that that's an old woman screaming like that.
I know. Have you seen the video of her do it? It's so good.
Yeah. She sounds just like it. Yeah. Shout out to Toriyama. Okay. Now, I think the first thing you need to understand is the map of the hero's journey, the map of Save the Cat, the map of what makes an effective, compelling narrative, beginning, middle, and end, is about the events of the narrative, the beginning, middle, and end. There is no correlative of they power up at this point. They realize the error of their ways at this point. That's not how it works. Usually there is some level of understanding that comes around the all is lost point, because that is in the Dark Night of the Soul. That's literally what that is, because they realize they've been wrong about everything. And they kind of figure out something that is going to pick them up and drive them into the last act, especially because most people, because it sounds like this is like a fantasy thing, because you mentioned magic.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are conditioned by fantasy and sci-fi and superhero genre stuff to have you have some sort of power up in the last battle.
Yep.
Usually when you're getting that ass beat. So either, you know, you find the item, the force is with you, Luke, yep. You know, always, something comes through and they're like, oh, this isn't even my final form. Pachu, 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 I win. Right?
We do because, make a lot of Dragon Ball Z references.
Right. You know, I was just telling you. Okay. Somebody, I was right before we went live, somebody mentioned being like, if somebody did something to them, they'd be so embarrassed that they'd leave forever. And I literally said I would come back for just one Vegeta level display of haterishness that you could see from orbit. Like you would like the energetic dome on the side of the planet. And then I'd be gone. Yes. So yes, I do casually refer to Dragon Ball Z all the time. Release that pressure on yourself. What you need to know is the order of events. That's what has to fit.
Yeah.
And then you get some insight into where some of these things, I mean, because obviously the Campbell's hero's journey parallels the beats of Save the Kid, but it's not one-to-one. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm the structure fiend. I know 15 different structure models and they're analogous, but they're not one-to-one. But it's like, if you're going to have a meeting with the mentor type thing, then that's when they kind of learn some stuff, you know, like that's when you put the blast visor down and are fighting at the, you know, trying to hit the little droid thing. You know, if they have, you know, when they meet their allies somewhere along the way, I do think some things that you need to keep in mind is an effective villain is always stronger than the hero, but mm-hmm. that strength is not necessarily physical strength. Like Lex Luthor is stronger than Superman in his influence and worldly power that he wields, not that he can beat Superman in a fist fight. So the foe needs to be bigger.
Yep.
And that alone should let you know that no, your hero does not have to be fully formed by the midpoint. They never are. Otherwise your villain is now no longer bigger. Because if you're like the villain's going to win at that point, unless something saves the hero. And in general, you don't want that. Coincidences get them into trouble. Coincidences don't get them out of trouble. Then once you have your sequence of events, you can kind of plot out where the power spikes are or whatever. And also where the emotional stuff comes in. I do think going into in the finale, especially look up the 5-point finale if you never have the Save the Cat 5-point finale, because this might help you a little bit because it breaks it down even more granularly of the things that need to happen. But their peak awareness needs to come right before their peak power up, which comes right before they win.
Yeah.
And I mean, this might be on the same page, you know, but there's something where they're like, oh, I realize blank.
Yeah.
Dun, da, da, da. And hooray, we win, you know? Mm-hmm. But kind of restrict your thinking to the sequence of events that needs to take place. And then let that inform where the other things need to fall in the string of Christmas lights that is your story.
Real quick, I went back and read the email. And you know, I was like, you mentioned Star Wars. They didn't mention Star Wars. Apparently, I just hear Joseph Campbell and I think Star Wars.
Well, they said Tan Jedi and Darth Skywalker. I guess that was the thing. So I assumed that was a mention.
Yeah, for some reason,
they obviously have seen it.
Yeah.
Do we have this person's handle? Because I'm absolutely about to tweet. I know that you said. Do we have a handle?
I'll look at the email. Aaron, you go.
Okay. So I'm gonna offer slightly different advice in case it is something you need. I am firmly of the belief that every novel is gonna need a revision. I'm sure there are people out there who say they'll do it right the first try. I think they're liars or lizard people.
Or just wrote something bad.
Or that, right? So it is possible that trying to weave all these strings together is too much, that what you need to do is to weave what you can, follow the story, and then take the outlines you understand and lay them on top of the first draft. I found this helpful at times, because even if you have an outline, you might get, the more of the things you might realize is, oh, my midpoint drifted, or, oh, I didn't really have a good reversal here, things like that. Save the Cat is designed first and foremost for films, so it is a can be applied to a novel, but not every novel works to fit in that. So this structure that, you know, you're looking, it sounds like you're looking at a lot of different structures. So you're trying to find the one that fits, and it might be that it's something squishy and in between. That's okay. Mm-hmm. This is not a science. You're allowed to break the rules. But what those structures are good for is to keep you from sort of doing things that are going to be a problem later, right? Understanding that these events need to come, that these beats need to come, that things need to move, stops you from writing a scene where, you know, we just all sit around and talk about what we're going to order for brunch. So that's fine. But some people need to write the scene where everybody sits around and orders brunch and then look back and go, oh yeah, no, not that. So if you're having a lot of trouble making this outline into a sort of perfect, seamless roadmap, maybe make a cobbled together roadmap and strike out and see what happens. But the other thing is that, like B. Dave was saying, that these things, you know, might take up more or less space than you're expecting. They might actually need to come very late. Like the sort of character arc you're describing, it does seem like it's asking you to do things earlier. And then the other thing I will note is that this sort of thing works best when they tie together very tightly, where you cannot achieve the external arc until the internal arc is solved. Where if you're going to achieve some kind of skill growth, you have a by doing that, it causes a realization in your internal arc, right? That you need to do something to move along that, or that, you know, the power was in you all along, something dun, dun, dun. Like this, right? That they, if they are too disparate, if they're spread out too much, if defeating this antagonist does not resolve something that refers back to that that internal arc, that's going to make it harder to weave them together. So if you have all these, if the strands are pulling apart from each other, that might also cause this problem. You know, if it's a case of, like, you know, she's learning this magic and she's having difficulty learning this magic because the magic is hard. Additionally, she has this internal arc where she is having trouble making friends because she brags too much and is a compulsive liar. Those things don't have anything to do with each other, right? Yeah. If we have an antagonist that we have to fight because he is going to conquer the kingdom next door, and that's a bad thing, yes. But if that happens, what happens to our protagonist? Nothing, really. Maybe down the line, she'll feel bad about not being able to help. But these things, you know, when they're not kind of entangled with each other, they each take up more space. They are not sort of feeding their energy into each other. And so braiding them together gets so much harder. So as much as you can, make them affect each other. Make trying to solve, you know, she has to get over her difficulty with authority in order to get the mentor that's going to help her learn these skills. Because if she doesn't learn those skills, her brother has to marry the big, bad, evil guy. And there we go, right? Like, make sure that they all push on each other and bring them in together so that she can do that.
No. And, you know, a lot of times the world before, the people aren't necessarily bad. They're just kind of mid. You know, Thomas Anderson was just kind of a cog in the wheel hacker. You know, Luke was kind of like a whiny little bitch that wanted to join the Empire. I will say, remember a couple of things. One, as much as I talk about Save the Cat, I do because it's a good start. My actual process, what I actually do, is a fusion of like four different things, including some things that are just my own that just I do. So it's not always paint by numbers. In a lot of the, even though I think the order of events is still very logical, remember, in a screenplay, you're on a budget because you must accomplish certain things by a certain page. You have to. A novel doesn't have that. Like, you absolutely can sit around and talk about breakfast, but I would point out again that everything should advance the plot, reveal character, or advance theme. So they should, if they're talking about eggs, they shouldn't really be talking about eggs. And I'd say the last thing I'd point out is you do, the only thing I would say is kind of a hard and fast rule. And I don't even know if this came up in your question, but it kept bubbling up in my brain to say, you do need to make sure you have all of your characters introduced fairly sharpish. In a script, they all have to be introduced in the first 30 minutes. In a novel, you probably can push it a little further, but I wouldn't push it that far. Like, I think it'd be weird if you're like 100 pages in and you're like, and here's the bad guy. Like, it's different if you're
You
like,
mention them.
yeah, like
That's
the
okay.
Necromancer King, and then you meet the Necromancer King. But if you're like, this is the first I've heard of a Necromancer King, you
I
know?
have read a book like that I was just like, oh, this is just going to be a story about their challenges and getting into the. Oh, no. Oh, 145. Page 145. Okay.
Now that's
It can
bold.
happen, but you're doing it on
And
hard mode when you
it
do
went
that.
from 0 to 60 fast.
I just wrote a screenplay where I had to introduce 21 characters in 30 pages. So
Wow.
I kind of cheated with a lot of subtitles where they were just like in a room and I was
Yeah.
like their names kind of fade in under
Yeah.
them while they're like the Legion of Doom, instead of being like,
Meanwhile.
yes, Solomon Grundy, what do you think? No, it's just Agent Solomon Grundy wants pants too, and just have Solomon Grundy written under him. And then that was kind of
Born
how
on
I
a
did it.
Monday.
It was, in fact.
Right, ready for the next question?
See.
Yeah. All right. Greetings, oh great and mighty rulers of the Empire of Tangents.
Good
Again,
Lord.
I just have a quick question about developing antagonists. I have a vague idea of an antagonist for my dystopian story concept, but I'm finding it hard to make them believable in my own mind the way that my main characters are. I was wondering if you have any tricks or techniques any of you guys use to come up with antagonists. I know that it helps to make their motivations, fears, desires, etc., a kind of a conflict or mirror to those of the main character, but I'm still a bit lost. Also, do you have any guidelines for when to know that you've figured out enough of your antagonist to start writing? I'm really excited to write my story, but I've been unmotivated because of how vague my antagonist is in my head. Thanks so much for the wonderful podcast. Your very faithful first knight, Joy.
I like that. I feel we've gotten quite a few questions about antagonists, but I do feel like this one is different with like making them as interesting as your main characters.
Well, remember, the antagonist is the hero of their story. So, that right there informs a lot of things,
I'm not arguing with that. I was thinking of like because I think didn't they say like making them memorable or something?
Making them believable.
Making them
They're
believable.
not feeling it.
Yeah.
I would
And
say, oh, sorry, go ahead.
well, like the motivation is 100% part of that, but it's also like their attitude towards it. Like Thanos's motivation is one of those that makes people go, okay, like I see what you're doing, but like, ooh.
It's
But it,
because originally he just wanted to impress a girl.
I press death herself, yes.
I said what I said.
Yeah, literally the plot is he's just like, you know who I love? Death. She's a hot goth chick, and you know what I like? Hot goth chicks.
You know what? She wasn't even a hot goth chick at the time. She was a skull. He made her a hot goth
I
chick. So
know.
I'm like,
That's so weird.
your love was weird because you had to give her a glow up. So you weren't even in this for her, Thanos, the
But you
Matt
just
Titan.
wanted a goddess of death to be beside you. You didn't want her.
But yeah, like so, the motivations in the MCU are that. But what is memorable about Thanos is that as well as like the kind of character that he is and like the way that he handles those motivations, not stopping against any superhero that stands in his way sort of thing. So what I'm gonna take a step back now because I'm like, I don't know what the hell I do to make my antagonist
So,
like that.
do you want to go first or should I?
No, after you.
Okay. So I think there's two things here. One, making your villain the obstacle to your hero. They both want different things and they cannot both have what they want to start with. Like that's sort of the core of finding a villain that fits in your story. And so let's assume you've done that part. And then you get to like, why did they do the thing? Well, you kind of want to find something that you can imagine why somebody would do. And you know, I think we all have pretty good imaginations. We can work out
What?
most things. There's some stuff where you're like, I would never, but you can imagine what the justifications would be. You can imagine the justifications. You can imagine what's like, you know, like let's take Thanos. Like, let's just kill half the world, make them not exist. This isn't good. But it's like, but look, what's terrible thing could happen instead? Well, people do this all the time of saying, I will do a hard thing that's not ideal so that the better thing can happen. Well, you can imagine that. And that's where he's sitting. You don't have to say, yes, I think genocide, just unfiltered half the world, great plan. That is not necessary. You just need to make the logic of the character work out. And so, like, they're trying to do something. Why are they trying to do that? Why do they think they're trying to do that? What are they telling people about what they're trying to do? It's a dystopian story. A lot of villains in dystopian stories are, you know, like resource hoarders, right? Because it's such a hard, bad world, right? If you can make it a little easier for other people, some that you've chosen, right? You might have a chance at a future. Or you might be like, nobody is going to help any one of us. I have to help myself. This is what anybody else would do. Or maybe they've got some plan, some great grand plan for how this is going to work. But maybe deep down, they like being in control of a bunch of impressionable people. And this is not actually about the great plan. That's just what they keep saying because that keeps the whole thing in motion. And this kind of exercise is what I think you need to do with this character. It's just kind of imagine why would somebody do this?
Yeah, I mean, the more logical their outcome and why they're doing it, the better. The more that the reader or the viewer could see themselves doing that also, the better. It's funny because I took some notes in everything I wrote down. Aaron said almost all of it. I think you also have to ask yourself, are they actually evil? Just in your own mind. Because remember, the spectrum from good to evil is selflessness to selfishness. And if you decide they're evil, then they should be fairly unrepentant and be having a pretty good time about it. It's like Anthony Hopkins did an interview once where he was talking about when he played Titus Andronicus, and he was given some advice by some great actor. Maybe it was Laurence Olivier. I forget who told them this. But the advice was, don't feel bad about the things Titus is doing because he doesn't. You're having a great time doing just awful things. And this comes down to a villain like that, to give pop culture references that Aaron will understand 50% of, Magneto versus Mahito in Jujutsu Kaisen.
I did understand only 50% of that.
Same
Nicely
story,
done.
same. Well, Magneto is a byproduct of having been in human concentration camps. And Magneto knows they will never accept us because they don't even accept themselves. And so he is the perfect mirror of Professor X. But that is why Magneto is willing to do the things that he's willing to do, because he's like, I literally know how this ends. Mahito in Jujutsu Kaisen. So a very slight detour, but it's very interesting. There is a group of cursed spirits that are like the fundamental embodiment of certain human fears. Like there's a character of like everybody's fear of fire. There's one who's everybody's fear of the ocean. There's another one that's everybody's fear of the forest. Mahito is everybody's fear of death. But he's beautiful, and he kind of has this like very delicate, flowery voice. And Mahito may well be the worst villain ever written, because he does just abominable things gleefully, happily. Like his affect never changes, because again, he's like, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, did you drop your arm? Like that's Mahito, you know what I mean? And but he's unrepentant about it. So if you're gonna have that character, you gotta have that character. If you're going to have Darth Vader, who secretly there is some good in him, and maybe he just thinks he's gone too far to turn back, you know, that's a different thing. So you got to decide that also, and that'll kind of help inform it.
I want to add one thing. If you have a character like Makito where you're like, it's a this person is a full monster, this is not the kind of villain you give a point of view to.
No.
It does not behoove you to give people a peek inside his mind, because all that will do is make him more comprehensible, and it will force you to create logic for him. And that kind of character where you just want to embrace the horror of it, it's better if you don't try to humanize it in any way. Somebody else is standing next to him. They can have a point of view, right? You just hear the stories that could work.
I'm sending you guys a picture of Mahito right now. Like, that is the worst. That is the worst villain ever. Just look at that guy.
Okay.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. He's like this, like, you know, cute little twink boy. The worst villain ever. Yeah.
I love that.
The thing that I will add is kind of from what both Aaron and B-Day were talking about is when you have these motivations of like what they are and what they do, think about how they do that and the way that makes them the villain. Like that's kind of what Aaron was talking about. Of like, they have a motivation to do something, but the way that they go about doing that, and to what B-Dave was saying, the selflessness versus selfishness. I can say words, but also like the way, like say that they're doing it in the selfish way, the way that they get across that to the reader through their actions of interacting with other people, because along with like, you know, what the big bad's plan is, like that's the sort of thing that people are going to remember. That's going to be one of the things that makes them memorable. It's Thanos's attitude of I am inevitable sort of thing, like that. Just think about the way that they conduct themselves that shows they are the bad guy. They are the villain. They are the one that needs to be stopped.
Especially if you can leave the reader with like, do they need to be stopped?
Exactly. Or, you know, you can just go the classic way. It's like, oh, who's the villain? It's the one that kicked the dog.
I love the ones where you're like, where they seem very reasonable and they explain themselves and you're like, yeah. And then they're like, and that's why we have to kill half the world. Yep. And you're like, whoa, hold up. Because it just reminds you, like in you, there is a part that could go wrong. Yep. And good on you for not doing it.
Yeah, we're one sentence away from disaster.
Also, important point of clarification for Aaron's edification, he wipes out half the life in the universe.
Oh,
he wipes out half of all life everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Goodness.
Yeah.
Yep. I didn't watch that movie.
It's okay. It's okay. Fine.
There's so, it's okay. Many of them.
It's up until that point, it's all worth it. Like post that, it's debatable. Me as a nerd, I've loved, but the journey they really take really does culminate in a very satisfying payoff.
It's going to be a long time until we get to the point again that someone can say, no, seriously, watch 26 films before this. It's worth it.
I kept up for a while and then I just got overwhelmed.
Yeah,
that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they're just very, I don't know. There's a very clear structure, and I would like a little more variety. Thank you. All right.
That is not what the House of Mouse is here to do.
No, it is not.
Yeah.
All right. Ready for another one?
Yeah.
Hello, kind people who live in my phone and keep me company during the long hours under the thumb of late-stage capitalism!
Hey!
It is we.
I thank you so much for being awesome, giving great advice, and keeping me company while I work those 12-hour shifts. Ammo here, and this question is specifically for Trevor. You've mentioned before that you have ADHD and some of the things that are easier, harder, or even impossible because of your ADHD. I also have ADHD and find a lot of what you've said very relatable. Apologies for any rambling happening here and for how long this got. It is a little bit long. I'm going to read it, though.
Okay.
My particular brand of ADHD means that I have a hard time staying focused on one thing for long periods of time, even the things I do enjoy doing, like writing. Brownie face. I've loved writing for years and years, but could never bring myself to write more than one or two small things a year, like less than 5K, for a very long time. But these last few years, I've been finally writing more and building my stamina for longer works. I'm still struggling to write anything over 20K, but I'll get there. And I manage this only because what I've been writing has been fan fiction. On the ADHD side of things, having characters and settings that I already love takes out a lot of the stress of having to build it up myself. It also lets me look at it deeper to see why I and many others are so enamored of those characters / settings. Plus, having friends in the same fandoms as me who are just as in love with those characters helps a lot. And I know I love these characters, so even if my brain slips away and has me focus on bookbinding or crochet or some other hyperfixation for a while, I know I'll be back, hopefully. I'm not sure if I'm articulating this correctly, but what I'm trying to say is that fanfiction takes out a lot of the stress of having to build up worlds and characters. And that's been letting me focus on the more mechanical aspects of writing, such as studying story structure, themes, and grammar. Sentence Tenses and I are fighting behind a Denny's at 3 a.m. and I am getting my ass kicked. They keep switching on me without me noticing until later. I'm not sure I'd have gotten this far if I was only writing original fiction because I can't focus on it for long enough to write anything of substance. And that's frustrating. I love writing fan fiction and the community that it brings, but there's a wall there that I can't seem to cross when it comes to my original writing. My brain just won't keep on one story for long enough to do more than a little outlining. I guess my question is this. You've stated before that you used to write Star Wars fan fiction, but yet you've since written several original works. How did you get yourself to remain focused on one project for long enough to complete it? And I do have several projects going at once, but it's often the art of writing itself that I get burnt out on, not just the projects. Or even just keep yourself from writing a bit and then moving on, leave a trail of works in progresses behind you like jilted lovers. I often have tricked my brain into letting me write, going to the library or doing 10-minute sprint, etc. I can't seem to trick the damn thing into actually staying on task. Anyway, sorry for the long ramble, and thank you guys for talking, being so supportive of fanfiction in general. It really means a lot. Ammo, a Chan Jin tier, just trying their best.
So two things. One, I did leave the entirety of that in there because I have been reached out to by several Tangerinos who are like, hey, I have ADHD. What you talk about sounds very familiar. And I wanted people that have ADHD that are trying to write stuff hear that as well, because I do feel like that is relatable to a large portion of our listener base. Two, just a little fun thing. When I read these beforehand in the email, I read them in Aaron's voice.
Everything is better in Aaron's voice.
I'm not kidding. When I go through people's emails and read and you know, parse them before going into it, I hear them in Aaron's voice. Okay, so let's start back at one again. Fan fiction. I heavily endorse this. I have told so many people so many times, hey, if you just want to get writing and you want to try and understand the mechanics of writing, do fan fiction. Take a property that you love, just start writing a story. You have enough in your head that you can sit there and build something out. One of the optional things that I put in there is you can make it very strict on yourself and be like, I am only adhering to what they're doing. Like I will not deviate from it. You know, no demons are showing up in my Star Wars or anything like that. Or you can go the other route where you just start throwing in stuff. But I heavily do recommend if you just want to try and get writing and doing the mechanics, fan fiction is a great way of doing that. Now, switching over with ADHD, it was rough. It was super fucking rough. I essentially had to decide, okay, I'm going to write this book. That is the only thing I am able to work on right now. Anything else has to wait. I think I let myself write things down, like a quick idea, but that was as far as it would go. I told myself I have to finish this book before I can go work on other things. And that motivated me to be like, I can't even write my Star Wars fan fiction. I can't write anything. I have to write this. And that was a little, and that was brutal, because my brain did want to jump around to like, I want to do sci-fi. I want to do urban fantasy. I want to do this. I want to do this. No, I'm focusing on this fantasy story and that's it. And so one of the things that I did try to do is kind of try to manipulate that hyper focus of like mainly only taking in fantasy things at the time, so that I kind of stayed focused on fantasy. Like, that's what I was hyped about. That's what I was excited about. I was diving into Dungeons and Dragons at the time. Game of Thrones was on. I was reading Lord of the Rings. Like, I had all of these different mediums that were keeping my brain in this fantasy place to get through doing that. And I will say this, you don't have to do that with every book, because after that, it got better and I was able to do other projects while finishing a book. But if you are having trouble, that could be what helps. But with ADHD, it's so different for every person. I'm not going to say I have the miracle cure for it. That's what worked for me. But it is really just trying to focus. And I know that is the worst thing for an ADHD person to hear. But I will say this, you don't have to get a planner. So that's good. I'm not going to sit here and tell you to get a planner, because no one, I got fucking work. But just dedicate yourself to doing one thing as best you can and try and keep your hyper focus in that direction. I'm not even going to say pinpointed on it, in that direction, so that you can come back to it and still feel interested and hyped about it. This has been my ADHD writing TED talk. Thank you.
Yes. Clap. I only can pin on a little bit about that, because that is not something that I deal with in specific, but I think everybody that takes this on, seeing something through all the way to the end, is something that 100% of people grapple with. Mm-hmm. Unless you've got like Rain Man levels of like hyper fixation. The only thing I would add to that, because I think Trevor gave very solid advice there, is release the idea that there's some quota. I mean, you said I can only focus for a couple of sentences. Great, write a couple sentences.
Yeah.
Over a long enough timeline, it'll be done.
Yeah.
I mean, it might be years, but it'll happen.
Okay, well, you know what? You reminded me of something from that, writing that first book. I had a word goal every day, and I had a little whiteboard that I had each day of it on there. Some of, like, the majority of those days was 500. If I could hit 500 words, good fucking shit. Good stuff. And if you can, like, even if you have to do 250, whatever the number is, you set that, you do that, you're done for the day. That's the thing that I do think did really help, was like having it be like, I'm going to get my words done for the day. And once I got those done, okay, I don't have to worry about that again today. I'm done. I'm free. I can do whatever I want. And set that for whatever you are comfortable with and realistic with, and that will help.
I have two things, and they may not be helpful for you specifically, mm-hmm. but I'm going to throw them out there anyway. One is, just because I did not quite pick this up from the email, it's okay if you just keep writing fan fiction. This is entirely a valid way of practicing your art.
Yes.
There's, you know, if you have a story you want to tell, that's a great reason to write original fiction. But just in case there's some sense of like, I won't be valid unless I make a career out of this, or my craft is not real until I can make my own thing. Put all that stuff out of your head. If what you're enjoying is writing fan fiction, that's okay. Write fan fiction. The other part of this, oh, sorry, you were going to say
something. No, go ahead. I'll say that first.
The other thing, what just happened?
I think because you're on Mac, like you can make hand gestures and then emotes pop up.
A little bubble with a thumbs up popped up. That was real. Y'all, it was weird.
That was weird. I don't know.
What did I do?
Okay, I don't know what you did. Anywho.
We're just going to set that to the side.
You know, this happened when I looked away, and it's April Fool's. I'm going to say they're messing with me.
It's just the weakest April Fool's joke. If you missed it, an emoji popped up. It wasn't even a really funny one. It was a thumbs up.
Yep.
The other thing, and this is me having just fully the opposite kind of problem. I have never, despite the fact that I've written tie-in fiction, In my joy, it has never been because I've never been working off of somebody else's stuff. And even when I do tie-in fiction, guys, I basically just trim other people's property around my story. But you talk about being in love with characters. Give yourself time and space to fall in love with your characters and yes. your world. Like, this is the time where your brain stitching things together and wandering far afield is choice. Just, you know, sit with it, daydream about it, don't rush it, and tell yourself, you know, all the stories of the thing you want to write. And then that will be the thing that you're really hyped for.
Yes.
If that's what you really want to do.
Fan fiction launched my career, never stopped creating.
Yeah. The thing I was gonna say is I had a B-Dave thought. Because I was like, why did I stop writing Star Wars fan fiction and wanted to go original? And the answer in my head was, well, you wrote stories that went from the prequels to the end of the original trilogy, and you eventually got to the point that you're like, I'm not going to do anything better than what I've done here, so fuck it.
I mean, it is a terrible burden. You know? It's like the architect. Oh, I see it there. I saw it.
Yeah,
you see
it? There's the, there it is. There's a thumbs up.
It does look like a cartoon drunk, though, like a little like hick, you know, comes out of you.
It does. I don't know why there's a bell. Apparently the raised hand also is supposed to work, so that's what I was trying to do there. But it doesn't like
I thought you were just going for a high five. We're like, yeah.
High five!
Yeah, right. Yeah, we got the fusion last week. Now we got a high five. Right. Yeah, it's like the architect in the Matrix. You know, it requires a mind less bound by the parameters of perfection.
Okay. I think that we should wrap things up here. We're getting a little towards the end of the episode there. I'll make sure that these two get marked as unread again. But yeah.
I need you guys to know this is also available on Windows. It's not a Mac thing.
Oh.
I should not be trusted with such power.
You might have to turn it on.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to do that right now. Instead, I'm going to outro the episode. Friends, where can people find you? What awesome things you working on?
You can find me on Blue Sky and Twitter at Aaron M. Evans. You can find me on our Discord, most of all, because it's such a nice place. I like hanging out there. You can join me on twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers every Monday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific for concentration check, co-writing space. Come get some work done with me and a guest.
Yeah.
Next week is a friend of mine, Megan, who is a lot of fun. So that'll be a good time. I saw those crit awards go up and I told people I don't think I'm going to win anything. But if you watched Fearful Symmetry, please vote for Ilya because it will delight me beyond all things for that to end up in people's faces. That's my favorite NPC ever. So that's what I got. Also, buy my books.
It is I, B. Dave Walters, literally Aaron M. Evans' biggest fan. And I'm just preparing myself mentally to learn more than I ever wanted to know about the logistics of Minotaur milking.
I tell you something that's really funny about a social media thing. I posted a reel. I was making cake this weekend, and I posted a reel of me chucking butter in a mixer, and it just said "butter for the buttercream god," and that has gotten 20 times the interaction than anything I posted about books on Instagram has gotten. Apparently, I should just bake things with my books in the background. That's what I'm
doing. There you go.
I mean, that is the way the internet works.
I didn't even put music on it.
It's my horrible little mixer sound. Mm-hmm. But I learn things every day about Instagram. All right, I'm done. Mm-hmm.
You can follow me on the dystopian social medias at the Trevor. There's an A hiding in there. Go buy your what is this damn book called again?
Morning Glory Milking Farm.
Yes, go buy your copies of that so we can have a book club together.
It's gonna be great.
But that is going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, the best way to support the show is by leaving a review on your podcast service of choice and telling your friends about the show. If you would like to write in with your own questions, like the lovely people that did today, send those into writingaboutdragonsshit@gmail.com. And if you send them to my Twitter DMs and I don't notice them for several months, I'm sorry in advance. If you'd like to keep up to date on the show, you can join our Discord, or the Dungeon Scholars Discord, and get into the Writing About Dragon Shit's channel. The link is in the description below. But until next week, go write about some dragons and shit.
Move.